Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Okay, here we are, episode 103, and you can find all the links. And there's going to be video links today, so don't forget to go to the show notes, theaterfolk.com/episode103. So, and first off, I'd like to welcome Theater Folk cohort to the podcast, Craig Mason. Hello.
Hello, Lindsay Price.
How are you on this fine day?
I am just enjoying my day. How are you doing today?
That's a great way to put it. How are you doing today? I'm enjoying the day. That's it. That is all. I'll take it. Better than not enjoying the day, right?
Yeah. I'm kind of tired, to be honest. But nobody ever answers that question honestly, do they? How are you doing? They always say I'm good.
You know, that's pretty true. I think that's true. Actually, what I think it is when someone says they're fine, 9 times out of 10, not fine. It's almost like someone should write a song about that. Okay, so today what we're doing here and why Craig is here with me today is that we are having a long overdue episode of a YouTube fireside chat. Craig, isn't the middle of summer exactly the time when you want to curl up in front of a fake fire?
Yes, especially, yeah, fake fire for sure, not a real fire.
No, fake fire. We can make the fake fire anything we want. We can make it blue. We could make it sparkly. Well, we're talking Broadway today, so I think our fire is neon. What do you think?
Yes, and with all those chaser lights going around it.
Oh, perfect. It's very appropriate that we're talking Broadway today because we're going to talk about Elaine Stritch. Elaine, unfortunately, passed away earlier this month, and I am not one to think about too much about celebrity deaths and certainly not mention them on Facebook, but this one hit me more than a bit. How about you, Craig?
Yeah, I think she was such a wonderful performer that it really, when I saw that she had passed, it really kind of affected me a bit.
And it's more than that because she was a singular performer. There is an Elaine Stritch style that she had that made her unique. I think that's very important. And I think she really was the definition of a Broadway broad.
Yes, broad is the correct term for her. Her style was so unlike what one would see on Broadway today. I mean, for a woman who made a career in musical theater, she didn't really have a classically good singing voice. It was deep and growly and earthy, I would say, and fueled by bottles and bottles of Jack Daniels.
At some point. Okay, we're going to get into that. That's specifically what we're going to get into in terms of clips of Miss Elaine. So I just wanted to do just a very, very brief overview, just because, well, it's not even an overview, but she had a really amazing and long career and a varied career. I think people, you know, would look at it and just be so amazed. Like, she died at 89. She trained with Marlon Brando when she started out. She understudied Ethel Merman, which is it's pretty easy to see. And we're going to have a story just a little bit later on talking about Elaine understudying Ethel Merman. She was in the original production of Stephen Sondheim's Company. Her version of The Ladies Who Lunch is the one that people think of when they think of that show. And I remember her, my first memories of her in the 70s are actually not in musical theater, but on television. She moved to London in 72 and was on a British sitcom called Two's Company. And I can remember the theme song. I remember the opening credits. They were a cartoon. And I used to watch the show on PBS. And not only that, she just was not limited. For such a earthy and brash broad, she succeeded in television. She was in movies and on the stage in both musicals and in straight plays. And I just think it's just amazing. It's amazing. She was a force. And I think it's really important just to have a discussion, Craig, just about how her singing style is not the Broadway tone of today.
No, absolutely not. I struggle to even remember the last time I saw someone who didn't sing Broadway pretty, you know? But what she was real. When she sang, when she acted, you got such a connected sense of the character that she was portraying. And, you know, who said is art doesn't have to be pretty? There's some sentence about that. Or good singing. I know. I think it was Kristen Gauthier said this. I think good singing is ugly sometimes. And she allowed herself to not be perfect. She allowed herself to be flawed. And that's can only be achieved by just getting out there and going for it.
And she basically had one character that one, you know, like, you know, in terms of singing tone. But when she sang, she was a character singing. And I think where we get into trouble these days, particularly with young performers, with young high school performers, and they're seeing the current Broadway style. And Craig and I, we attend a lot of festivals, high school festivals. I sit in on competitions, and it's literally young girl after young girl singing in the exact same way. And I think there is a huge danger to that. There is a huge danger to teaching students to sing in this particular style. Now, of course, if they're heading towards a career in that arena, you know, if everyone else is singing that way, well, why wouldn't I sing that way too? But if there's, you know, 500 girls and then they all sound the same, who's going to stand out? I think it's the Elaine Stritch.
Well, it's going to be anyone who makes the song their own. And I think that's what you're saying, is that you see a lot of this now where everyone's just trying to sound like everyone else. And so very few people are managing to stand out. And I think the answer to that is to be yourself, to take a song and don't listen to the recording anymore. If you're going to be singing a song for an audition, just stop listening to the CD and reinterpret that song for yourself and make a character for yourself. And again, I mean, that's what Stritch certainly did. Anything she did was, you know, unique to her. There was no doubt about who it was on stage. It was Elaine Stritch. They talk about artists sometimes. The best way to stop people stealing your work is to make work that's so unique that it could only have been created by you. So if someone, you know, copies something in your style, they're clearly copying you.
And that leads really nicely into the first clip that I'm going to show. Now, Craig has not listened to any of these clips yet, and so we're going to listen and then talk about them. And you can listen to the clips yourself. They are in the show notes, theaterfolk.com/episode 103. It's really important, I think, for young students today to be made aware of a performer like Elaine Stritch and a performer who made work her own. The first clip we're going to do is You're Just in Love, which is a duet. It's in black and white, so it's like, it's old, folks. But it's just a great example of someone making a bit their own.
You don't need analyzing. It is not so surprising that you feel very strange, but nice. Your heart goes pitter-patter. I know just what's the matter. Because I've been there once or twice. Put your head on my shoulder. You need someone who's older. I rub down with a velvet glove. There is nothing you can say to relieve that person. Get sick, you're just in love.
Okay, Craig, what did you think?
Wow, I've never seen a clip that old from her. I only think of her as a woman maybe in her 50s.
From the 70s, like from Company, right?
Yeah, that's how I picture Elaine Stritch in her youth. So it's amazing to see something that far back. I can't believe that tape even exists. That is an amazing performance, actually by both of them, Russell Knipe and Elaine Stritch. But her face is so alive and so expressive. And you feel everything that's going on inside her as she performs. The other thing I'd say is I loved her physicality in the part where they stood. Again, you know, not a classical dancer and not classical moves, but so expressive and so telling of what's going on inside the character. I'd also say, too, that, you know, it's not the most complicated song in the world, but she undergoes a variety of moods and feelings as she performs the song. You see her traverse through it.
It's more than the words. And I really encourage teachers out there, show your students this video. So many times I see singing heads out of students where they sing so pretty and they stand so still. And understandably, there's reasons for that. There's breath control. There's hitting the notes. Well, what if they didn't hit the notes? What if they just hit the character? What if they hit the emotion? What if they hit the joy in this song? Like, what I'm overcome with when I watch her is with joy, and I'm affected. So that to me is a successful musical number when I am feeling the exact same thing that the character is feeling.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I can't thank you for finding that, because that was very special.
Well, it was my pleasure. Okay, so now the reason I chose the next bit, the next piece, is actually for a little bit of a different reason. And first of all, again, it's the same voice. It's the same brashiness, the same Broadway broad. I don't think it's a song that you would ever, 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 let me say that again, ever, ever, ever equate with Elaine Stritch. It's not quite a good fit. However, does she roll her eyes? Does she hold back? Does she go, listen, everybody watching, I know that this isn't going to fit. I know it. Well, you watch the clip and you be the judge of that. Let's watch it.
Someday my prince will come. Someday I'll find my love. And how thrilling that moment will be when the prince of my dreams comes to me.
Okay, what did you think of that?
That was hilarious.
Okay, so go to the show notes, episode 103. You have to see this piece for a number of reasons. So tell me, what do you think of it first?
Okay, well, let's just talk about... Okay, so the first thing is, how low does she sing that song? You're expecting, someday, someday my prince will come. But the other thing, too, is how committed she is to that song with chaos and absurdity surrounding her, and she just keeps singing the song, you know, very normally, very, very committedly. You know, if all that goofy stuff wasn't there, it would be a just fine performance of the song, you know? And it's a real great lesson about comedy and about how let the funny stuff be funny and let the serious stuff be serious. And that will resonate much more. If she had goofed, if she had made faces, if she had mugged that, oh, this guy's so weird, I wish he'd go away, then that would have really taken down the level of comedy. As a matter of fact, it kind of reminded me a little bit about Monty Python, where there's always something insanely absurd going on, and then there's always the person who's perfectly straight. And that's that dichotomy really enhances comedy.
Well, and I think that that's something that students have a lot of trouble with, isn't it? Like, everyone's got to be wacky on stage. Everyone's got to be doing something. That comedy is equated to wackiness. And that's not it at all. That someone has to be the straight man on stage.
Again, I think it was John Cleese said something along the lines of, comedy is not a person doing a silly walk. Comedy is watching a person watch another person do a silly walk.
And again, it's also about, this is about comedy and commitment. Do you think she was singing live?
Yes. I always assumed that those were pre-taped, because I'm not sure how they mic'd them. They must have had an orchestra there. But there was a moment where she shifts her legs and, you know, clearly there's a hitch in her voice. And so clearly to me, that was a live performance.
Well, that says to me, that was a lot of commitment, because there's at one point. So, you know, if you haven't watched it yet, I'll just give you a visual. Ernest Borgnine is dressed in a powder blue prince outfit, complete with tights and feather hat. And he is dancing around her, I think trying to make her laugh very purposefully. At one point, straddles her, and then he does the whole shoe routine where he's trying to find a shoe to fit her foot. And he is not being gentle, trying to shove a shoe on her foot. And she does not stop singing for a second, does she? She's just like... She gets through the song.
No, she only reacts like once to what's going on the whole song, right? Like right towards the very end, she kind of shoves them away, I think. But
I think that's on, and I think that's in purpose. I think.
Oh yeah, no, that's blocked. Yeah.
Yeah. So You know, if you, it's a real lesson in commitment and also in what, how comedy works on stage. You know, whether or not you, whether or not you think a guy in a powder blue suit is funny, watch her and watch her be the rock, and that, because that's her character, and so that she has to react in character and not roll her eyes and not wink to the audience. Okay, so what I've got now, and I think this is a great exercise for any teachers out there with theater, even theater students, general theater students, or if you have a musical theater class. And what I've got is I've got Elaine Stritch singing Ladies Who Lunch from Company, which is her signature song, but in two different decades. The first one we're going to listen to is from 2000, and the second one we're going to listen to is from 1973. And you can do a compare and contrast exercise with two different singers singing the same song, like Elaine Stritch and Patti LuPone, or Elaine Stritch and there was a, I believe, was it 2006 that there was the most latest version of Company on Broadway? And the woman who played Joanne in that version was fantastic. She
completely
was
completely different. Completely different from Stritch.
Oh, yeah. But just, it held her own like a champ. Well, what about when you've got, and now that we're in the digital age, there is video out there of the same performer singing the same song in two completely different time periods. You can do it with Patti LuPone. You can do it with Bernadette Peters, I'm sure. And how are their versions, same singer, but how do they differ? How has the singer's voice changed? How is the phrasing changed? And what phrasing is exactly the same? I'm really interested to hear what you think, Craig, about comparing and contrasting these two versions of the same song.
So we'll do them back to back? Okay.
Yes.
We'll see you in a second.
Here's to the girls who play wife. Aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of Life. Just to keep in touch. The ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools. Too busy to know that they're fools. Aren't they a jam? I'll drink to them. Let's all drink to them. The girls who play white, aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of Life just to keep in touch. Ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools, too busy to know that they're fools.
Rise!
It's just a tone, man, isn't it? She has just got, there is no other person who sings like Elaine Stritch. And no, you know, oh, God rest her soul, man. There's no one like her.
No, it's quite a contrast between the two performances, I thought. They were both her, but they were both had slightly different interpretations, I thought.
Well, first of all, and this is very interesting. So we picked two, as we were listening to them, we also picked a little snippet that you just heard before Craig and I started talking again. And quite interestingly, they're the exact same length, meaning they both started at 210 and they both ended at like 253. So that's very interesting that doesn't change. Like timing doesn't change.
No, I felt like the first song started very slow, but I guess it was the same pace.
Okay, so here's, I felt, and I think that it sort of makes sense. The second one, the first one that we saw, it was a concert. So it was sort of a presentation. The second one was so close to when she actually performed the role. And I felt it was a character. Like I've got more, I felt she was, in the second time, she was really singing about herself. And I didn't get that in the first time.
And by first time, you mean the 2000 version, right?
I do. We backed it up. We started with the 2000 version and then the 73.
Yes. Well, the 2000 version, there was also the irony of you know, it was clearly some kind of gala performance, and everyone in the audience knew her work very, very well. So, you know, the applause when she started the song. So it was clear, you know,
and also
there's
applause,
a different layer on there.
Yeah, and the applause when she put certain spins on it, whereas mm-hmm. when those, in some cases, the same spins, like right before, you know, after Vodka Stinger, got applause mm-hmm. in the 2000 version, whereas in the 1973 version, it's like a stab in your heart.
Yeah. So the 73 version, that character just seemed just devastatingly deeply affected by the people to whom she's referring. The 2000 version, I mean, I think when you get older and as you age, you know, that type of stuff affects you slightly less, or you can at least look back on it with a different slant. But I'll tell you what I absolutely adored about the performance. Actually, it's more noticeable in the 2000 version than in the 73 version, but it's there too, is how alive she is. And there's so much in the opening section of the song, it's so slow and there's so much space between the singing, and she is so alive in those empty spaces. You see her, she'll sing the phrase, she finishes the thought that phrase was, the new thought comes to her head, you see that happening, and then she goes into the next phrase. And it was just so masterful. You see so many performances where people, if they're not singing, there's a pause in the song, the character goes away. And I found that her character was present even more so in the times where she wasn't speaking. Did you catch that too?
Well, it's a complete performance. It's really funny that you say that you found the second or the 2001 slow. And I just didn't notice it at all. I didn't notice that it was slow, which means that, yes, I was completely engaged when she was singing and when she wasn't.
Yeah, I didn't mean that it was slow and that it wasn't interesting. I just meant the pace felt slow.
Yeah, but I think that's what, if I felt it was slow, it means I wasn't engaged.
Right, yeah, you didn't even notice. Yeah, wow, what an incredible performance. I remember reading that Stephen Sondheim book, and he talked about, I mean, this song was written for her, and how Sondheim kind of always had it in the back of his head that at the end of the song, when she's screaming rise, 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 that it would bring about a spontaneous standing ovation. And he said it never happened, and he knows why, but that's what he was thinking when he wrote it.
You know, and if you want an extra little insight into that whole journey of her doing the song, there's a documentary of the making of Company, and it is her, I believe it's no secret, she was drinking quite a bit at the time, and her trying to record Company, or trying to record Ladies Who Lunch, was
epic.
That's a good way of putting it. Devastating, I think, was the word I was going to use.
Yeah, there's a point where Sondheim just drops his head into his hands and is just completely depressed. It's quite an amazing documentary.
And I think that they had to record, they sent her home and they had to record the orchestra, and then she came in the next day.
Sung to a track, yeah. All right, let's move on.
Okay, so Elaine Stritch, you know, not only a brassy singer, a brassy broad, and just as a little extra clip, I've included something in the show notes, and I got to warn you, she's not genteel in this clip, but she talks about Ethel Merman's tip for performing musical comedy, and I think it's just a perfect example. You want to see what Elaine Stritch was like, this little clip is just the best example of what it means to be a Broadway broad. And before we leave, both Craig and I have seen Elaine Stritch on Broadway. It was in a not a great performance of A Little Night Music. And instead of talking about that, we have a friend, a Toronto writer and a Second City instructor, Janine Profeta, who has a story about not only going to see her one-person show on Broadway in 2002 at Liberty, in the name of the show, but she also sort of managed to worm her way on stage and got to see her after the show and what that was like, and what it was like to meet her. So let's go head over to Janine. Take it away. Okay, so hello, Janine.
Hello.
Okay, so I knew that we were going to talk about Elaine Stritch on the podcast, that you were the one of the first people I talked to, because you have seeing an Elaine Stritch story.
Yeah, we saw her in action. She was amazing. It was in 2002. She was doing her one-woman show at Liberty. And I really didn't know a lot about her at the time, but I knew that she was sort of the last of those old-school Broadway performers, like a real Broadway broad.
Yes.
And so that's why I really wanted to see someone like that live perform. So we ended up going to, it was February 2002, ended up going to New York, got tickets to the show. It was actually a night as well where she, because she fought, or she had diabetes all her life, and she actually got really sick that night during the performance. They had to stop for half an hour.
And
she left the stage. But it was also, that was like one of the most amazing theater experiences, just in the sense that everybody in the audience just patiently waited for her to be ready. I think she just had some juice. She just rested and she came back, and everybody just cheered, and she just picked up where she left off and went for it. And
okay. When you were watching this, like, did she actually, she stopped the show and she had to like... What did she say?
Well, because there was a couple of times she was messing up the jokes. There was something about a nunnery, and like, but she'd have to keep backing up the joke. Like, she'd start it, but she'd be like, no. And then it was the first time I've ever watched somebody just walk off the stage. And then she came back and she tried it again, and it just wasn't working. And you could just tell she wasn't. And like, we're also talking about a woman who's in her late 70s at this point. And then her stage manager or somebody came out and just said, you know, Ms. Stritch, she needs to have some juice. She's feeling her blood sugar's a bit low. So we're just going to give her a minute and try to carry on with the show. And it just felt like the whole audience went, yep, that's what we'll do. And then at one point, some guy had started doing the slow clap to try and get her back on. And the whole audience turned on him one just like, but again, because like New Yorkers, they're known as like, you know, impatient and blah, blah, blah. And everybody just gave her her space, and she came back and she was fabulous. So I'm so glad that we saw that. And, not glad that she had that experience. But it was interesting to watch how a professional dealt with something like that. Because she is the show. Like, if she's not up there, there's nobody else to help cover for her or whatever. So that was the first part. So we were just blown away by that. And then at the end of the show in the Neil Simon Theater, upstairs, the women's washrooms are very small, as there are many theaters, and the guys are much bigger. So my husband was able to use the washroom really quick. And as he was waiting for me in the lineup, he sort of kind of half came into the washroom and went, Janine, she's on stage talking to people. And at that point, I'm just like, okay, you guys can have my spot, and ran out. And we went back down into the theater, and Dave, my husband, was able to figure out how to get backstage because it's not quite clear. And as we're going up the steps, there was one of the guys like kind of sweeping the floor, and he said to us, he's like, excuse me, who are you? And I'm holding my program. I feel like I'm like 10 years old at this point. I'm like, we just want to say hi to Miss Stritch, please. And he's like, yeah, if anybody asks, tell them you're producers. And he lets us onto the stage. I'm sure that's against IATSE rules.
And, just one or two, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so we go onto the stage, and there's just a lot of people waiting around to see her. And so we're at the far end. I'm watching her sort of make her way. She obviously knows all these small groupings of people. It's, you know, like family members or cousins, or it's just something. So she's slowly talking, saying hi, and I'm standing there sweating bullets. Like, my program is still, you can see the indentations of my hands, because I'm just like, oh my gosh, she's going to come over and we're nobody and we're going to get yelled at or kicked off the stage or something. Like, we shouldn't be here. And finally, as she's making her way to me and she's made eye contact with me, and again, I'm so nervous. I hear out of this on my right side, like hello, darling, or something like that. I can't remember exactly what she said. And Elaine Stritch turns to acknowledge the other person, and I turn, and it's Shirley MacLaine. And it's Shirley MacLaine in this big fur coat, looking fabulous. And they start talking to each other. So at this point, they're both like 2 feet away from me on either side. And I'm caught in their conversation. Like, and so, you know, Elaine Stritch is asking Shirley MacLaine, she's like, oh, how's your brother? Like, Warren Beatty. And, oh, he's fine. Oh, is he still with that girl? And Shirley MacLaine, like, which one? And they keep checking in with me. And I'm just like nodding. And I'm just caught in this conversation between these two amazing performers, and I just felt so included in it. And it was great. It was really great. I'm really glad I have that memory. And then at the end of it, Shirley and her entourage left, and Elaine turned to me with the, you know, who are you, and just signed my autograph, my program, and that was it. But for a moment, I was part of Broadway greatness.
So when you saw her and when you saw this last of a dying breed, this Broadway broad.
Yeah.
What struck you?
Oh my God, just everything I want to be and try to be as a performer and everything I want to teach my students, just the idea of, because these are women that fought for their positions and they didn't get to where they were because they were necessarily beautiful or perfect singers. They had the drive. They knew they wanted to perform and they had to find ways to just put themselves out there and make themselves memorable, like their characters. And I just admire that. And it's that thing again, like, especially in this day and age where physical beauty matters so much, it seems to be in like the movies and stuff like that. It's not necessarily your talent. It's how you look. It's just that there's ways around it. And that those of us who really want to be there, want to perform, there's another way to make yourself known and make yourself stand out and make yourself something special that people need to pay attention to.
And when you talk about teaching your students, what do you want to teach them about how to perform like someone like Elaine Stritch?
It's that idea of taking the stage, that when you're on the stage, you deserve to be there. You've already done the auditions and stuff like that. That's your time. And you have something to say. And it's okay to say, okay, audience, look at me. Here's what I'm going to do. And it's not a conceited thing. It's not necessarily a pride thing. I think there's something quite wonderful about just really planting your feet and delivering. And that a lot of what I see as an improv teacher is people playing small, especially women. And they're taking the classes because they're trying to come out of their shells. So this is a way to demonstrate what it means to really come out of your shell. And to have those examples that, you know, you can look at a woman like this, like her, and hear her story about her, you know, leading up to through the career that she had to make herself known and go like, I can have that too. I can be that person. I have something to say. I can be memorable too.
Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot. It was 12 years ago. I can't do math. 12 years ago. Is there any one of her stories that still kind of sticks with you?
Yeah, I just, Well, I mean, the fact that she worked with people like Noel Coward and she was Ethel Merman's understudy. Oh, my retelling of them is terrible, but I love that she was Ethel Merman's understudy and was just so eager to go on stage, but Ethel Merman never missed a show. And again, we're talking another Broadway broad. And there's also that sense of like, there's people that are clamoring up the ladder and they want to take your spot. And I think she was really reticent to let Elaine Stritch on stage and probably wisely so. So yeah, so poor Elaine Stritch, she never got to do a show. She was somewhere and got the call that Ethel was sick and did like pack up, get herself to the theater during a snowstorm, I think it was. There was this crazy story getting there, only to find out that Ethel was already in costume, ready to go.
Well, that's another thing to learn, too. It's like, you know what? Maybe you need to. Well, isn't that's how Suddenly Modern Millie. What's her name?
Thoroughly
Modern Millie. I'm looking at Craig. Do you remember her name?
The character or the actress?
The actress.
Yeah.
That's how she became and I'm really, really embarrassed because we saw her in Anything Goes and she was absolutely fantastic.
Sutton Foster.
Yeah. That's how she became a Broadway star, was because she was the understudy and the lead got sick and then the understudy just took over.
Yes.
So you always want to be prepared. You always want to be in that moment or you never want to get sick.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all part of the folklore, like part of the fairy tale that is the theater too, right?
Absolutely. Janine, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Janine. Taking the stage. I think that is the epitome of what Elaine Stritch did. And I think that is what we should be teaching all of our students. We have to get students to take the stage. And it's so easy when we're young to not want to be noticed and to not want to stand out. And, you know, let's all be like Elaine Stritch. Maybe.
No.
Okay. But we can embody what she stood for. Taking the stage, maybe?
Yes. Oh, of course. No, I just don't want to be Elaine Stritch. Not really. I don't want to have the problems that she had in life.
Right. Excellent. Okay.
But I would like to perform with the same type of bravado with which she performed. So, yes.
Agreed. Okay, so in that regard.
Yes, I do want to be Elaine Stritch.
I do want to be Elaine Stritch. Okay, so that's wonderful. So before we go, let's do some theater folk news. So, Craig and I have been working on a special secret project all summer long. No lounging on the beach for us, I'm afraid. And that project is just around the corner. We've polled drama teachers from around the world on what they're looking for, what they want, and what they need. We're putting on the finishing touches and tying on the sparkles and the bows, but here's the thing. Make sure you are on our email list. We're announcing it there first. So go to theaterfolk.com/signup, and I'll put the link in the show notes too. And that's episode theaterfolk.com/103. If you want to hear about our secret project first, that's where you need to go. Finally, where, oh, where can you find this podcast? Well, we post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk. You can find us on the Stitcher app, and you can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search on the word, what? No, theaterfolk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care, and...
High five.
No, rise!